How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We have so much news to talk about today. Last week, we did the year in review 2011. The biggest stories so far of 2011. Hopefully you didn't listen to that yet if you don't want spoilers for the rest of December. But we've got all of the news today from the last 2 weeks. So much stuff to talk about today, including last night's Ultimate Fighter finale. One of the best finales of all time. One of the best fights of all time. One of the best finishes of all time. We're going to talk about Diego Brandão and his armbar finish on the show last night. Plus the battle of the coaches, Mayhem Miller and Michael Bisping. One of these men may not be back in UFC again. We're going to tell you all about that. Plus, fights planned for UFC on Fox 2. Big show coming up in January. They've got some fights. I'm not a fan of them. We'll talk to Mike about those, see what he has to say. Plus, of course, a bunch of pro wrestling news. Raw is back tomorrow night. Tomorrow night is Raw. The week after is a 3-hour Slammy Raw. We'll talk about both shows. They are countdowns to the WWE TLC pay-per-view, which is coming up in December. Tables, ladders, and chairs. What matches are scheduled for the show? What matches are probably being bumped to the Royal Rumble? What is being changed? We'll talk about that. Plus, last week's live Tuesday night edition of SmackDown. If you thought a year in review in November was weird, how about a Christmas show in November? That's what we got last week. A Christmas show in November. I don't know what they're going to do for the actual Christmas SmackDown this year. Perhaps they'll have a New Year's party in the middle of December. But we'll talk about that show, some of the big angles, plus Impact. Lots of stuff going on in TNA. They've got a pay-per-view coming up as well. We'll talk all of the matches on that show thus far, the angles they shot on Thursday night for Impact, what they have upcoming, and more. Plus, the last 2 weeks, lots of stuff has gone down, including the passing of a Japanese wrestling star. Star, in fact, who worked a lot here on the West Coast as well, got his break in California. We'll talk about Bison Smith. A UFC suspension, a WWE star leaving the company, John Cena wearing Zubaz. We got so much stuff to talk about today. Starting after the break, we shall get into it. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for 2 hours every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. I want to do a big shout-out this week to AM560, Sports 56 WHBQ in Memphis, Tennessee. Chris Lance and Eli Savoy in charge of getting the show on the air out there in Memphis. Want to send a big thank you out to them every week in Memphis, one of the hottest cities in the world for pro wrestling for many, many years. So hopefully we'll get a lot of new listeners there in Memphis, Tennessee. And let's jump into the news for today. Pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 2 hours. Last night, the UFC Ultimate Fighter finale. We had two big fights to crown new Ultimate Fighter champions and the battle of the coaches, Michael Bisping and Jason Mayhem Miller. Miller beaten, TKO, third round, looked terrible, got tired, and afterwards at the press conference, Dana White said, chance we may not see Mayhem Miller in UFC again. And Mike, what did you think of last night's show?
You know, sometimes you have that, you got the coaches fight on there, or the big name fight that you attach on top of the Ultimate Fighter shows. There's a tradition of that. Usually it's not the fighters, because they usually square off on a pay-per-view. But oftentimes they'll have two name guys that people know fight on top of the shows. Just in case you haven't watched the show, it brings some eyeballs to it. But this was a case where the main event was completely superfluous, really, after the two semi-mains, especially, or the main semi-main event, the featherweight final between Brandão and Bermudez. I mean, after that, it was just going to be icing on the cake with Mayhem and Bisping. And unfortunately, the icing was a little bit sour. If you could ever say an adrenaline dump, Mayhem Miller certainly had one in the second round. The first round he looked good, got a takedown. I thought he won the round. Dana was so upset after the fight that he said, you know what, a quarter mount didn't mean anything. I thought he was being quite wily, and doing a good job in that first round, and I thought he won it. It wasn't huge, but I thought he had the better gamesmanship, and was touched with a few left hands that you didn't, you know, they were good. Bisping's a bigger, stronger guy, and he really popped him with a couple of good punches, but he didn't think it was all that big of a deal. They show Mayhem in the corner, and you see him starting to breathe heavier, blood's coming out of his nose, and you figure, okay, it's still going to be okay, and in the second round, he just fell apart. It basically became just a, you know, a large heavy bag there for Bisping to beat up on. He tried to use some gamesmanship and actually did a really good job of defense, and it's almost like Pernell Whitaker used to do in the corner, where he would just kind of duck down. Now, Whitaker would do it out of defense. Mayhem was doing it out of the fact that he just couldn't stand up and throw any punches. But he dropped to his knee, and he kind of, you know, wobbled back and forth and baited Bisping, and was actually doing a pretty good job of generalship. And at that time, Bisping got so upset, he threw a kick that if it would have landed, would have caused a disqualification, because he would have killed Miller with it, frankly, with the force of it, and as tired as Miller was, there was going to be no way he was going to come back from that. So he almost backed out of it with he almost got out of it with a victory there. But for Bisping's sake, he was lucky he whiffed and just continued to beat on Miller. He somehow made it out of the second round, and then, you know, at the beginning of the third round, that was just too much. And really, I was really surprised. I actually picked Miller to win the fight because I thought his craftiness was going to pay off, and he caused Bisping to have a lot of problems, and actually he'd be able to squeeze out a decision. But one, I also forgot it was going to be five rounds, too. I probably would have thought better of that, because Bisping, obviously, his gas is far better than Mayhem's. But I was just really surprised in the way that Mayhem fell apart, and Bisping won. And Bisping was really tired, too. But, again, they weren't even the notable part of the show last night.
One of the best fights. Literally, this is one of my favorite fights of all time. This is a fight where when I watched it, I was like, how many friends can I find to bring over to watch this fight? This is a fight where, like, if you have friends, or maybe you yourself are not a big MMA fan, and maybe you see fights and sometimes you think they're boring, this is a fight where when they replay this on Spike, you need to watch this fight. It's on free television. Watch this fight, record it, and if you have friends you're trying to convince to watch fights, you should probably show them this fight. Now, granted, they may never see a fight like this again, but still, it's a good first fight to show people. Diego Brandão, he's a young Brazilian fella. He was in the finals here of this tournament facing Denis Bermudez for the 145-pound slot of Ultimate Fighter. And Diego, his father passed away, and so he was supporting his mother. And he wanted to win this tournament here in December and win some money so he could go back home and buy his mama a house. And he also wanted to have enough money to get his brother away from the druggers. As we said, I need to get my brother away from the druggers in Brazil. So he wanted to win all this money and go back and provide for people during the Christmas holiday. And he was facing Denis Bermudez, who went to the finals despite taking some beatings and having some close calls the entire season. And Bermudez did a pre-fight promo where he said, I'll say one thing. I hate to lose. And I thought, oh, buddy, bad times for you coming. Because Brandão's a scary guy. He didn't have the best record, but he's a scary guy. He slaughtered everybody this year in the competition. And they go in there, and they have this fight. And I had actually been alerted via text message because I watch on the West Coast feed. So, of course, a fight like this, I start getting texts. And the texts are talking about the awesome fight that Diego Brandão won. And I'm like, meh, I knew he was going to win anyway. Not a big deal to have it spoiled. So I'm watching this fight. And I'm thinking, okay, let's watch Diego win this fight in the first round, like these text messages said. So Bermudez gets in there, and he starts laying a beating on Diego. He knocks him down. He knocks him down again. Diego is in so much trouble that there's that part of my brain going, oh my God, it's, you know, why isn't the ref stopping it? It actually wasn't quite that bad, but I mean, he was in trouble. And you know, Bermudez is just landing shot after shot after shot, and the clock is ticking down. And I'm thinking, did they screw up when they sent me that text message? Was it actually Bermudez getting the first round stoppage? Because there's no way Diego's coming back with like 12 seconds left. And Bermudez throws a shot. He leaves his arm in there a split second too long, and bam, Diego slaps on the most perfect armbar you've ever seen, taps out Bermudez. Everybody goes nuts. Joe Rogan goes nuts. The fans go nuts. You can see people in the front row going nuts. This was just the greatest finish to an amazing fight, an amazing comeback from behind fight. I just thought that this was, I mean, it's too bad we did the year in review a week ago, because this one would have been near the top of my list as greatest moments of the year. So Diego, not only did Diego win the tournament and win a six-figure contract, he also won a best fight bonus and a best submission bonus. So he maybe will go back to Brazil and buy his mama two houses and get all of his brothers away from the druggers. This was great.
It really was. I didn't, you know, as far as a fight goes, I don't like it as much as you do. I mean, there were a couple of fights on the last pay-per-view, obviously, that I thought were better. But with that said, you know, they obviously had a lot of hype for this guy going into it. I mean, we all picked him. You know, he's a guy with, I forget, he's got like seven losses. It doesn't really matter how many losses he has. It's what he's doing now. He was absolutely incredible and hyped up coming in. I mean, Joe Rogan said, oh, no, when he got caught with a right hand. I mean, it was pretty obvious that Brandão, he's going to be, they look at him as the next big thing. And the thing is, even if I don't like this fight as much as you do, fighters become superstars no matter how they're hyped or packaged by doing big things at big times. He did a big thing at a big time with almost no time left on the clock, getting an armbar out of absolutely nowhere and coming back from underneath, where after that story, you have to like the guy anyway. And he just did it. It was an absolutely incredible finish. And again, just, this is one of those things where you go, there's obviously you could pros and cons about oversaturation and all of that stuff, but you know, one thing about having a lot of shows is sometimes you get a lot of great fights, and there's been a lot of great fights, and this being another one. And Brandão can walk right into 145 right now and be a contender.
We're going to head to a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about this. So much news to talk about. 2 weeks worth of news on today's show, so we got to pack it all into 120 minutes. Back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here every Sunday afternoon, 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And again, a big shout-out to the folks at AM560 Sports 56 WHBQ in Memphis, our newest affiliate. And if you'd like to become an affiliate, if you're listening to this online, for example, and you work at a radio station, you want to become an affiliate and carry Wrestling Observer Live every Sunday, email me, Brian@WrestlingObserver.com. That's the place to go. And you can also check out our Facebook. We've got a Facebook at Wrestling Observer. I've got my own personal Facebook, facebook.com/official. Brian Alvarez. Not a normal Facebook, but exceeded. I overshot my target, as Raven once said, in regards to his weight. So now you have to go to facebook.com/official Brian Alvarez and twitter.com/Brian Alvarez. WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. And Mike is on Twitter as well. And Mike, plug that real quick.
Yes, Semper Vivi. SEMPERVIVE. Always alive.
I was going to say.
The Twitter name and facebook.com. /Michael Sempervivi.
Is that what that means, Sempervivi, always alive?
Yes, it's a mighty, mighty name. Isn't it?
I was going to say, my God, what a mighty name that is.
See, if you would have remembered your Latin from school, you would have known that.
Well, I knew the vive. I was actually going to say something about vive, but I'd forgotten the semper.
Well, see, now you know. Education here on the on Wrestling Observer Live.
So anyway, last night was a tough finale, everyone, and if I haven't said it enough, you need to check out the Diego Brandão fight. It was awesome.
Hey, Brian, there was another education.
What's that?
John Dodson, educate. I think we all picked Dillashaw in this fight, you know.
Actually, hold on. Let me go back here very quickly, because I want to say something, because you made a comment in the last segment when you were talking about picks that I just wanted to talk about here. I picked Brandao, but I was hesitant about that, because Diego Brandao does not have the best record. And I realize that the perfect example of records and how much stock he needs to put in them is a guy like Randy Couture, where he is one of the all-time greatest fighters in history. But if you look at his record, it's hardly a stellar record. With Diego also does not have a stellar record. But he ran through the competition on Ultimate Fighter. But there's always that part of me that thinks, okay, he looked awesome on this show, but why does he not have a stellar record? You know, maybe he gets clipped a lot in his fights. Maybe he gets reckless. Maybe he's susceptible to a submission or whatever the case might be. So there was that part of me that thought, you know, there's no guarantee this guy is winning this fight. I did pick him, but I was, you know, there's a reason a guy has fought a bunch of guys in Brazil that nobody's ever heard of and doesn't have a perfect record, you know. Now, granted, you know, there's a lot of guys that don't have perfect records early in their career, and they get hooked up with a great camp, and then they just kind of explode. Maybe very well what happens here with Diego. But going into this fight, to me, there was no guarantee he was going to win. And with Dodson and Dillashaw, yeah, I think most people pick Dillashaw, but, you know, I didn't actually do an official pick for this fight because I missed a couple of episodes. I didn't see TJ Dillashaw's fight, but I saw Dodson's last fight. And to me, Dodson, here's my take on Dodson. And actually a couple of guys here on this show, including the fella Louis Gaudino in the first fight. These are guys that they're in the 135-pound division, but they're only there because there's no 125. And I look at these guys, and, I mean, Lewis was in there with Johnny Bedford, and Bedford was like 6-7 inches taller than he was. And Dodson's in there with Dillashaw, and Dillashaw's 6-7 inches taller than he was. And you know, my thought going in was, John Dodson is a good fighter, and he very well could win this fight here. Now, when you throw him into the actual 135-pound division, with the guys like Faber and Cruz and guys like that. I mean, Cruz especially is going to be like twice Dodson's size, twice the reach. It's just they're too small for 135. They can win this tournament here. That's all fine. But, like, I mean, I could be totally wrong. But do I see Dodson?
Marcus Johnson.
Exactly. He was just too small. There needs to be a 125-pound division, but there's not a lot of movement in that direction right now because they just added 135 and 145. So these guys, for the time being, wrong place, wrong time, realistically.
Yeah, I understand the philosophy that, I don't blame them. You don't want to change too much up right now or water too much down as you're trying to move forward in all these platforms and doing all these new things with Fox and the whole nine yards, and you want to get things established and strike. Well, you got a lot of things on the plate. With that said, I think as the year goes on, you may want to add 125. You don't have to make a big deal out of it. You don't have to go, you know, and I understand people saying, well, your champions have to be known and all that stuff. Yeah, sort of, to a point and everything, but I mean, you know, again, if you get great fights at 125, that's all anybody's going to really remember at the end anyways. These two guys had a great fight, so I think as the year goes on, if it's possible, if they see there's enough guys like this where they can just quietly bring it in, I think they should do that. But Dodson, I didn't realize Dodson, I knew he was, you know, powerful for his size, but I didn't realize how speedy he was and just, you know, Dillashaw, and I think it was announced with the, did I hear that right, the monkey-style fighter?
Yeah, they said he was
around like a monkey and just walked right into a roundhouse sidearm left hand that he was off balance on anyway. It caused him to do the splits, one of those things where you just, you know, the hockey goalie drop where you think the guy just tore both ACLs. He actually bounced up from that, got hit with another one, and then pounded with a couple more, and it was probably a quick stoppage, but to be honest, again, you never know what could happen because the last fight showed it with that armbar out of nowhere, but I think he probably would have kept eating left hands.
Yeah, they call him a monkey-style fighter. I guess it is Team Alpha Male, so that makes sense, but
I'm surprised Mayhem never announced himself as a monkey-style fighter from over the years.
Even he has too much pride. But anyway, this fight here. Yeah, the thing about the finish, I mean, I've said this a million times. quick finishes, to me, if you determine it's a quick finish based on the replay, it doesn't count. Because the ref didn't get that replay. He had to make that split second decision. However, with that said, as this finish was taking place, I was watching on the screen going, Herb Dean is behind both guys and he can't even see Dillashaw right now. So as it was happening, I was thinking, whoa, you sort of jumped in there, and Rogan was defending it. And I talked to other people that were there that said, yeah, when Dillashaw stood up, I mean, he was way wobbly and out of it. But at the same time, I mean, he was going for a single leg at the time that it was stopped. And I just thought, I don't really want to say it was a bad stoppage, but this was not the best stoppage I've ever seen.
But I wonder if, now this is a crack against Joe Rogan or anything, because, and I didn't hear what Dana White said about it afterwards, but if that was Steve Mazzagatti, would they be defending it as quickly?
I don't know. Probably not. That's just,
you know, and that just,
way
and again,
things go.
It's what you said. I mean, Herb Dean, one of the best referees, was just a little bit out of position where that's why you thought he made the call too early. But again, realistically, it also wasn't one of those things where, you know, anybody's going to be beating down the door to, you know, with pitchforks and torches.
At the show last night, or actually it was prior to the show, which was really interesting, they announced the main events for UFC on Fox 2. Now, the reason this was interesting is because they announced this, like I said, before the show as opposed to after the show. And they announced there are going to be two title runoff matches. The winner of John Jones and Lyoto Machida, which is going to take place this coming weekend, they are going to face the winner of Chael Sonnen versus Mark Munoz. So, essentially, even before Michael Bisping fought, he knew that no matter what, he wasn't getting the next middleweight title shot, which is rather interesting. They also announced that they were going to do a Rashad Evans-Phil Davis fight. And the winner of that fight was going to face the winner of the, actually be the John Jones-Lyoto Machida fight. And the Chael Sonnen winner will face Anderson Silva. So anyway, if that doesn't confuse everybody enough, basically, I don't like these fights. I'm just going to flat out say it. I don't like these fights. You have two money fights on the table right now. And those two money fights are John Jones versus Rashad Evans, which has been in the making forever, and Anderson Silva versus Chael Sonnen, which has been a few years in the making. So you're going to risk both of those fights, both of those money fights, you're going to risk those with two fights that nobody cares about. Nobody cares about Rashad Evans versus Phil Davis, except for their immediate families. Nobody cares about Chael Sonnen versus Mark Munoz, except for their immediate families. And probably not even their immediate families, because Chael's probably smarting his family up. So, you've got the possibility of Munoz beating Sonnen and Davis beating Rashad, leading us to Munoz, Mark Munoz versus Anderson Silva, and Phil Davis versus John Jones, which are two fights that nobody cares about. So, to me, if you want to risk a big money fight, and they've done it many times, if you're going to risk a big money fight, that's okay if you're going to risk it with another big money fight. But to risk a big money fight, to put together a fight that nobody cares about, that's a mistake. And that's exactly what these fights are.
And we're going to have to end up continuing this after the break because, yeah, they really put a gun to their head with this. I mean, if Mark Munoz wins this, then you almost, in a way, you have to put Munoz and Silva on the next Fox show again, because it's not going to draw on pay-per-view. It's just not. And then you better hope you can build Munoz up enough where you can make him a deal where people are going to want to see him, you know, against Silva. You put enough of Silva out there, people will respond to it and want to see him. But, you know, with all that said, you could try to make lemonade out of the lemons you've been dealt if Munoz wins, realistically, from a financial and money business point of view. But the fact of the matter is you've lost Sonnen and Silva on pay-per-view, which a lot of people are going to pay for, and you have that same problem with Rashad and John Jones, which, again, we can rant about this more after the break. It's just, you know, it's very sporting of them, but it's a mistake.
Head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Tons of stuff to talk about today. 2 weeks worth of stuff, in fact. Streaming worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Also available over the air. Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94. XM Radio Channel 208. And joining us this week, a new affiliate. Big shout out, the folks at AM560 Sports 56 WHBQ in the great city of Memphis, Tennessee, home of the King Jerry Lawler. We'll be talking pro wrestling here in a bit. We're here every Sunday afternoon, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Check us out, any of those places, and check us out online as well at WrestlingObserver.com. If you love this radio show, and you only get to hear it once per week, or maybe this is the first time you've ever heard this show, you are missing out. We do radio shows every single day at WrestlingObserver.com. In fact, this past Thursday, I did 3 shows in one day. Many Thursdays, I do as many as 4 shows in one day. Exactly like this one, although obviously not the same news. Talking about everything, interviewing some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling and mixed martial arts, including this Tuesday, Bobby Lashley is going to be on the show. We'll be talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts with Lashley.
Texas heavyweight champion Bobby Lashley.
That's right. He's a Shark Fights Texas heavyweight champion in mixed martial arts and one half of one of the biggest WrestleMania main events of all time. We're going to be talking to him. We have thousands and thousands and thousands of shows in our archives. It is a subscription site. It's only $10.99 a month. For $10.99, you not only get all of the new shows, but every show we have ever done dating back to 2005 is in the archive. So essentially, for $10.99, you can download about 6,000 shows, which is like less than a penny per show. My math is bad, but I presume it's less than a penny per show. I could be wrong. But regardless, a lot of stuff to download. Check it out. Go to WrestlingObserver.com and completely free on the right-hand side of the page, if you scroll down, is a listing of our latest 3 free radio shows. I think 4, actually. Download all 4 absolutely free. All you do is click on a link. There's an MP3. There's no wacky advertisement page you have to go through first or anything like that. It's just click and download. Put them on your iPhone, iPad, iPod, Android, whatever you listen to your audio on, listen to them, and if you like them, think you could have 5,000 to 6,000 more exactly like that for just $10.99 a month. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. We're here talking news, talking the UFC on Fox Episode 2, which is coming up in January, and we've got 2 title runoffs, 2 big matches being risked to put together 2 fights that, quite frankly, nobody cares about. And Mike, you may continue your discussion.
If you were going to, and this is me, if you were going to have Sonnen and Munoz, Munoz just, and Chris Leben is another issue we'll get to later, Munoz just defeated Leben, is a great All-American wrestler, I mean, is a contender, but would not have been in my next 3 as far as people I would face up against Silva. Now, if you're going to risk Chael Sonnen and everything over the years and all of the headache and stuff that has gone on, both pro and con, but mostly obviously pro with Sonnen leading up to this rematch with Silva, if you're going to risk him, why would you not risk him against somebody else that would fit the void a lot better if he, you know, that other person would have won, which to me would have been Michael Bisping, who may be fighting on the card anyway against Brian Stann or Damian Maia. I guess it looks like it's going to be Brian Stann. To me, that would make the most sense. Stann's been out in the media a lot more, you know, ever since the UFC on Fox show. It just kind of makes me think that he's going to have that fight. And if you were going to do this, why announce it before Bisping's fight? See if he comes out and wins the fight and then says, you know what? You have the you know, a lot of people don't like your mouth. A lot of people hate you. Well, guess what? You get your opportunity on Fox against Chael Sonnen, you know, and, or somehow play it up where obviously there's 2 people, you know, the worst of 2 evils. Somebody's going to have to choose somebody to root for or pray that they knock each other out, like Anderson Silva will, and try to hype it up that way. If Munoz wins this fight, and I don't think he will, but if he does win this fight, again, I don't know what you can really do, and you've blown it because unless you can figure out a way to hype him up enough or showcase Anderson Silva in such a shiny light, that's the only way I think you're going to get interest on Fox for that show. When it comes to Rashad and Phil Davis, I really like Phil Davis, but again, why? I mean, why did you have to have, you've been building up to Rashad and John Jones, and I think this is a lot less in this division. I think guys can beat each other and still come out of it okay, but it's still going to do damage to, if Phil Davis were to win that fight, if it ends up being Phil Davis and Machida, again, not, you're going to have to put it on pay-per-view, but it's not like, again, it's Phil Davis and Lyoto Machida. I just don't think it's going to be a great pay-per-view draw, even though you're going to have to put it on there. And again, you've risked, you know, Rashad and Jones. People are going to want to see them beat each other up anyway, even if they have losses on their record, if they both lose this next fight. And in fact, that might be the best case scenario. If one of them's going to lose, they both should probably lose. So at least you have a reason for them to face off against each other and still not lose too much of the burn that you've had for it.
All right, the Chris Leben situation we kind of teased a little bit earlier. Chris Leben has been suspended for 1 year. He failed his drug test in that Munoz fight for two different painkillers, one of which was oxymorphone, which is a massively high-powered painkiller that I believe they give to terminal cancer patients to manage their pain in their final days. This is a hardcore drug. And he failed for it. And I, of course, cover professional wrestling. And suffice to say, there's plenty of drug use in pro wrestling. And when I was doing a show on Chris Leben, the next morning, I began getting texts from, of all people, wrestlers, saying, he failed? That stuff's out of your system in 3 days. Because, in fact, that stuff is out of your system in 3 days. Many years ago, there was a fighter, who was it, that failed for cocaine. I'll remember. Anyway, point was he failed for cocaine, and it was like, this is a man who has a problem, because cocaine is out of your system in, I don't know if it's a matter of hours, but, it's exceedingly quickly. And to fail a drug test for cocaine, that's not even a surprise drug test. It's like, you know when the drug test is coming, and you still take cocaine within 36 hours of this drug test. You got a problem. And same thing with these narcotics, these opiates. He knew when the drug test was coming, and somehow he still was unable to get off in time for the drug test, and busted. So he is out for a full year. Hopefully he gets whatever help he needs. But that is a scary situation. Melvin Gillard was the cocaine failure, if I recall correctly. I'll confirm that here in a second. But and he admitted he was having some big problems at the time. So hopefully Chris Leben gets the help that he needs. They did not fire him, which probably is in his best interest, because if he does have a problem and he gets fired, he just goes and fights somewhere else with the same problem. Being suspended for a year gives him time to take care of whatever problems he might have.
Yeah, and it's a class move by UFC to keep in mind. Yeah, you don't do this with everybody, but you certainly have to do with him. I mean, you know, it was, they made money and they got a huge boost to their business, and I don't know if it saved it or not. I guess that's all up for debate, but it was in the process of helping to get it to where it is today, where his alcohol issues and his issues on the Ultimate Fighter show, and he's been a Lazarus type figure that's come back from the dead. I mean, he, you know, the zombie thing against Akiyama on short notice, taking that fight. There was something wrong with him. Obviously, you know, we know what it is now, but he just didn't look right in the Munoz fight, where it was like, Jesus, maybe he's fought too much. Exactly what's going on here? He was, you know, what's the injury? And to find out he's on that kind of, on the, you know, those types of painkillers, especially the one you named, is obviously it's a problem, and getting him out for a year, getting him the help they can get, and trying to help him out for a guy that, you know, inadvertently helped them out so much, is a good move, and again, a sad situation.
While we're on the subject of suspensions, let's switch over to some pro wrestling here and talk about the suspension of Truth.
You have to explain this to me. This is just what a wacky suspension, and timing such.
Explain what part of this do you want to explain?
Well, it was, you know, when did he test positive exactly? Because 2 weeks ago, and we didn't have a chance to talk about this, Cena caused, at the end of, after Survivor Series, and Rock and Cena's victory over Truth and Miz, Cena at the end of Raw turned the two on each other. As they were going up the ramp, Miz hit the finale, or whatever he calls it, on R-Truth on the top of the stage as the show ends, and then it comes out afterwards that because again I guess I don't know what I was expecting coming out of that feud or anything like that, but then they announced that Truth is suspended and he had already tested positive. When did he test positive exactly?
I was not there, and I don't have a copy of the testing results, but I was told by at least two different sources, may have even been three, that Truth and Evan Bourne failed at the same time, and I was originally told not for the same thing. Which, apparently there was a party that several of the WWE stars were at. And suffice to say, when they heard that Evan failed for one thing and Truth did not, they were baffled. How is this possible, they asked. Because apparently they were smoking the same thing. So, that was a very strange situation. And word got out online, and everybody started talking about it. Why? How did this happen? Evan suspended, and Truth did not. And I actually was given reasons why it was possible that Evan was suspended and Truth was not. But then, about 3 weeks later, after the pay-per-view, 2 weeks later, he did the pay-per-view main event with Cena and The Rock. And the next day, and this was unbeknownst to anyone, apparently. The writing crew didn't even know this. When they had him do the skull-crushing finale, I guess the writing crew just thought, he's gone till next week. Nope. About 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock a.m., all of a sudden they announced that, in fact, Truth had failed, and he was being suspended for 30 days. So, it appears from several sources to be a case where two guys failed. One guy was suspended pretty much immediately. He got to do one more TV, and then he was suspended. And the other guy was allowed to do at least two TVs and a pay-per-view before they suspended him. And so, obviously, everyone's talking about this. To me, the bottom line is I don't even know if this is justifying what they did. And all I'll say is this, you know. They could have not suspended him. You know what I mean? In the end, he did get suspended, and in their policy, I believe it says that sometimes the guys will finish out ATV or whatever the case might be to write them out of storylines, and in this case, he was the main event of a huge match, so they made the decision to hold him over for 2 weeks before suspending him. But again, in the end, he was suspended. So, it is questionable, it is iffy, but listen, everybody, I watch the TV every single week, and every single week I have questions about the wellness policy. You know what I mean? So in the end, if they actually did suspend a guy who failed a test, then I really don't care if it took 2 weeks, to be honest with you. At least they got him in the end, you know? Because I have way bigger questions watching TV every week than questioning why they waited 2 weeks to suspend Truth.
Yeah, it's where that asterisk in their policy works for them because they can use a sliding scale on it, because if they didn't want to, they could have said, well, we'll just suspend Bourne then at the pay-per-view, have him drop the tag titles and no one would be the wiser, and then get rid of both of them at the same time. You know, and they didn't do that, and then they're able to slide it around. But, if marijuana is not a suspendable event, and all the rumors are that, you know, Bourne was the spice substitute thing, that's what a lot of people say they get suspended for. If it wasn't for one of those two things, then it's interesting to see what it would be.
Now, the one thing I will say is this all did come out online. Would he have been suspended had it not come out? We'll talk about that after the break. Wrestling Observer Live. Another hour coming up here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour or so, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, we were talking about Truth suspension, and as I noted before the break, he wasn't suspended until after the pay-per-view, and obviously the question remains, did they not suspend him for 2 weeks because they wanted to finish off the pay-per-view, and they didn't want to have to shoot an emergency angle to replace him in the tag team match, partnering with Miz against Rock and Cena? Or was it a deal where they weren't going to suspend him, but then when word got out online about what happened, and everybody was talking about it, they decided, all right, after the pay-per-view, we better suspend him. I don't know what it is. I have no idea. I'm only speculating. You know, maybe the plan the entire time was to wait till after the pay-per-view to suspend him. Or who knows? Maybe the idea was, well, we weren't gonna, but now that everyone's talking about it and it's become a story, well, we better give him a 30-day vacation. If that's
you know
the case...
I think you're onto something.
But if that's the case...
All these people that you or I or somebody out there may think could be suspended for a wellness policy violation, maybe they are just so valuable that the way they're looking at it is we, no matter what, we can't do anything until the very end of their careers. And then we'll suspend them.
Well, unfortunately for you, some of these people I question are, you know, they could use 30 months off. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, if that's the case, it makes you question a lot of things, you know? Do the wellness policy failures get out if a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears about it and it's a big name? Does it get out? I don't know. A lot of questions about the wellness policy, and no one should be mad at me about this because everybody questions this wellness policy. All the wrestlers question it. There's a lot of people that have questions about this policy, but fact of the matter is there are people that get suspended. There are people, and there are main eventers that get suspended as well. Although, you know, obviously people ask the question, is it every main eventer? I don't know. I do not know, but something that people can discuss on their own. We're going to head to a break. When we come back, we got a lot of other pro wrestling news to talk about. The build to the TLC pay-per-view. We'll talk about Impact, TNA from this past Thursday night. Talk about the special holiday edition of SmackDown and Matt Hardy. So much to talk about in Hour 2, Wrestling Observer Live, here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every Sunday afternoon by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. We are here at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and this week we're joined by our newest affiliate, Memphis, Tennessee, AM 560, Sports 56, WHBQ, every single week now in one of the hottest markets in the history of pro wrestling. Memphis, Tennessee, the home of Jerry the King Lawler. Check it out every Sunday afternoon. We are here, spent the first hour largely talking mixed martial arts, a tough finale last night on Spike TV, the final ever show on Spike before they move to Fox, and this hour, we're going to be talking some professional wrestling. Mike, you didn't get a chance to see the live SmackDown last Tuesday night, did you?
I didn't for this reason. I was kind of told, unless you're in a really good pro-wrest type of mood, don't watch the show, and so I didn't, and there was a lot of wackiness. I heard I may have gotten some laughs. It's on the DVR. I am going to watch it, but I didn't go out of my way to watch it.
There wasn't much to it. It was a Christmas show in November.
Why?
Why? I don't know. Because it was special.
Jolly old Saint Nick.
Yeah, it was a special show, you see. But it came after Thanksgiving, so they couldn't do a Thanksgiving show. But it came before Christmas, so they had to do the Christmas show, even though it was still November.
Yeah, I don't understand this. I know it's a lot of planning ahead, and I don't know if Christmas Eve if actually falls on a Friday or what exactly the deal is. They may do a best of the year, but yeah, why they didn't decide to do this show the week before, where people may not be watching because they're out last-minute Christmas shopping or just starting their Christmas shopping. Usually that's the case for me about a week or two before. Why they didn't do it then, I have no idea.
Christmas Eve is Saturday the 24th, and New Year's Eve is Saturday the 31st, which actually means I'm going to have to head to a UFC event that's going to take place on a rare Friday night. That's coming up on the 30th, the Alistair Overeem-Brock Lesnar fight. Anyway, we're going to come back with more pro wrestling after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and now in Memphis, Tennessee, AM 560, Sports 56, WHBQ, Memphis, Tennessee, the home of Jerry Lawler, every Sunday afternoon. afternoon. WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go as well for more. And Mike, you didn't see the live episode of SmackDown, but you did see the live episode of Raw the night before. A very interesting opening segment. Roddy Piper had John Cena in Piper's Pit, and I think the gist of it was he wants John Cena to tell the people what he really thinks about them. John Cena claims he's told the people what he really thinks about them over and over again. Piper thinks that, I guess, John Cena wants to tell them more. It's a very interesting angle because obviously John Cena is getting a lot of boos. He has been for years now. Some people think the boos are rapidly picking up in the wake of the return of The Rock. The question is, I'm not exactly sure why you do a segment like this, unless, at some point down the road, John Cena is in fact going to tell the people what he really thinks of them, which one would assume is that, I don't like you, shut up and quit booing me, which would indicate a heel turn, and the point is, I don't think they're going to do any of this.
And they shouldn't. I mean, part of me racks my brain, and I'm as close to saying as ever that, you know, this is only going to, you know, he's only going to save himself if he turns heel. The thing is, he still is too much of a draw to women and kids and too much in merchandising and too much to be the face of the company where, you know what, they didn't even need this promo. It's just because if they would have treated him like a man who just goes out there and says, look, I'm going to fight the good fight. I don't care what you guys say about me, but you know what? Person X I get in the ring with, I'm going to slaughter you, whether anybody out there likes it or not. Remember how people reacted to him when he dropped the shtick and he was actually pissed off after Money in the Bank, I think it was, when he was going to go up against Alberto Del Rio, and he got a response when he dropped the comedy. And it's like, you don't need to have stupid segments like basically I thought it was to lead off the show on Monday night when all you have to do is portray him having a set of, like, you know, huevos, let's just say.
Sure. So what do you think?
And that's, again, and the fact that it was, and again, the other issue is, with that segment, at least to me, you have John Cena and Roddy Piper, especially Roddy Piper, but neither one of these guys needs to be coached up on promos. Give them some bullet points and go out there, because when the crowd didn't respond exactly how everything was scripted and how they wanted them to respond, it seemed to throw those two off a little bit. And again, it's not organic. So again, now you have a segment talking about how John Cena should, you know, it drives me nuts. I don't know. I didn't think it was a good way to start the show at all, and it was a poor use. And again, I know what they're trying to get across, which is that Cena needs to get some anger back and some, tell some of those people what they think about him, but how about you just have him go out there and be a man, and I don't think you'd have this problem.
How do you think they thought the audience was going to react?
I think they figured they would just be more in lockstep to, you know, the big story. You got the legend out there, and he's going to smack Cena, and, you know, I just thought it would be one of those things where, I don't know, they would ebb and flow along with what they were saying in the ring a lot better than what they did. And again, they just, people see through this. I mean, again, one of the biggest problems that they have is the fact that it's not the people listening to this show exactly that are having issues with what they're doing. It's the mainstream casual fan that's able to put bullet holes in everything and not be able to draw logic gaps. And when you say you're aiming at those people, then, you know, you have to give it to them in a coherent fashion. And I don't think there was anything overly coherent about that first segment.
The other subject much debated was The Miz. The Miz, of course, laid out R-Truth last week, and then, or 2 weeks ago, and then last week, I guess it would be now, he destroyed John Morrison.
Gave him humble pie.
Yeah, John Morrison, the original partner of The Miz, how apropos. Miz sent him out of the company, for the time being at least. They left it open-ended.
Who saw that coming a couple years ago?
Sure. They left it open-ended in case John Morrison comes back. We'll see if he ends up coming back. But point is, Miz laid him out. I guess he's now on a rampage laying out former partners. Would Big Show be next, I guess, would be the question. But
or A-Rye.
Or Alex Riley. Actually, Alex Riley is the most likely scenario this coming Monday for him to lay out. But anyway, he laid out Morrison. Morrison is gone. And then he went in the ring and he cut a promo. And I don't know. There's a term called good promo. He's a good promo. And I've often heard people say that about The Miz. And I don't think that Miz is a bad promo. He delivers his lines great. Sometimes he's got great passion. But at the same time, many times, I don't believe a word coming out of the Miz's mouth, which to me is a strike against being a good promo. But it's hard to determine what a good promo is because I don't know if it's Miz's fault I don't believe a word he says, you know? Because part of it is he says all this stuff, but I look at him and I don't take him seriously. Is that his fault, what he looks like? Not really, you know? I mean, part of it is he's got the faux hawk, but Miz came out there and he cut the mean guy promo, mean mugging, and I just was like, yep, I don't buy it, and I don't know if I'll ever buy it, but he's next in line for John Cena, and I don't know. I'm not feeling it right now. Not feeling it.
I agree with you 100%. It's his flushed cheeks, and it would be the hair. You know, when he was first coming up and he was a real D-bag and, you know, the hair fit and he was smarmy and all that sort of stuff. And then they put this, it's just, yeah, I mean, he's a baby face. He's a baby face that if he's going to be a heel again, needs to get back in the good graces of all the fans again and then burn them by going back to being smarmy again. It is tough. And especially the way he's been treated, you know, as an afterthought at WrestleMania and onward, they haven't done him any favors into believing that he is a badass. I mean, they do some things, you know, some things with him and R-Truth every once in a while by having them walk out and just, you know, showing up The Rock and you know, Cena with not too much goofiness. But leading into that where he's screaming, you know, you suck at the crowd and all that sort of stuff, I mean, it just... They could have taken a better approach with him. And yes, he lays out guys, and he is a guy that you want to boo in the whole nine yards and everything, but it is hard to... If you look at what Cena could be as a heel, you look at what Orton is as a heel, as Henry is a heel, as lots of guys as heels, yeah, I'm sorry, Miz just doesn't kind of sort of live up to that. And it's actually too bad because he probably could by this point, even with the flushed cheeks and that sort of thing, but they haven't invested in him enough, and really, I think he's probably going to be better off as a baby face, at least, you know, I don't know if it's after WrestleMania or if you do it beforehand or not, but at least after WrestleMania, I think they should probably go that direction.
I don't know. I think that Miz would be, like, an awesome main event tag team guy, but they don't do tag teams anymore, so that's a problem.
He and Punk could be two odd couple jerks together that, the, you know, two young guys who are trying to lead a younger generation and sticking in being, you know, jerks to guys, but also being able to outwork them. Obviously, CM Punk really being the better example of that, obviously. But, you know, I don't know if doing something like that, and again, I'm not saying that's it or anything, you know, to have a counterculture to the WWE thing, but I think that's where Miz kind of would shine the best in a situation like that.
I actually thought him and Truth were great until they killed him leading up to Survivor Series.
And too much goof with it. They didn't need some of the nonsense that they did. R-Truth doesn't have to be a, you know, mindless fool. He can just be a guy who snaps and goes nuts with wackiness. He doesn't have to be wacky all the time with dumb catchphrases and then coming down saying, you suck. All they had to do is walk to the ring like they did before that last promo, not giving any emotion, just being jerks rolling in there and doing what they got to do sometimes.
So I think that, he would be a great main event tag team guy if you put him with the right guy. As you mentioned with Truth, I mean, he doesn't have to play the, you know, Truth doesn't have to play an idiot in order to have Miz.
The Pretty Ricky thing Vince always liked.
Yeah, I mean, Miz can still be the brains of the operation without making it look like Truth has no brains, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you're the brains of the operation here. That doesn't mean I'm a fool. It's very easy to do this gimmick. But, or I think he'd be, if they did managers, he'd be an awesome manager that wrestled here and there. But it's like the main event, number one, top heel facing John Cena. It doesn't work. We're going to talk about this more after the break and more of the build to the TLC pay-per-view, Tables, Ladders, and Chairs. Coming up in just a moment here on Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next about, 40 minutes. Talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We've already talked about a lot of different stuff, including last night's Ultimate Fighter finale, which was a fine show featuring a fine finish. And we're talking pro wrestling here as well. Raw, John Cena, The Miz, Mrs. Babyface. billion different topics here. Mrs. Babyface, Mike, you got anything to add to that before we move on?
I really, really don't. But, you know, again, Babyface or not, if you're not going to believe in him, if you're not going to do a whole lot with him and invest in him, then, you know, we'll be talking about 3 months after that they probably blew it with him. The same we do with lots of guys. Right now we have Dolph Ziggler headstanding. I'm not sure how I feel about that, even though I'm thrilled with the push of Dolph Ziggler. But again, Alberto Del Rio's in the doghouse. Why is Alberto Del Rio in the doghouse? I don't know. And why about any of those guys? You know, Jack Swagger, former World Heavyweight Champion, the guy that gave Money to the Bank with at WrestleMania, loses to Zack Ryder. Zack Ryder's now on TV. How long does that last for? Do they position him well, or will he always be a geek? It's just, again, you just have to throw your hands up and wait and see what happens. But, yeah, well, you know, The Miz, no matter what they do, if they're not going to back your guys up, then it's pointless.
We've got a couple of pay-per-views coming up. We, of course, have the TNA Final Resolution. I'm not sure if that's the name of the pay-per-view or not, or if that's the early January one, because, you know, Resolution, New Year's Resolution. Anyway, we have the final TNA pay-per-view of the year coming up here in a while. It doesn't matter what it's called, let's be honest. And we've got the TLC pay-per-view coming up in a couple of weeks, December 18th, First Mariner Arena in Baltimore, Maryland. You going to be there, Mike?
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right. As of the time,
a better chance I'd be going to DuBurn's Arena for the ROH tapings at the beginning of the month.
That's right. Now, as of the time that you are all listening to this show, there is exactly one match official for this TLC pay-per-view. One match, everybody. It is Mark Henry versus The Big Show for the title. Seen this match a number of times. They have not announced a stipulation yet, but I am pretty darn sure it's going to be a chairs match. Because, of course, they've done the angle where Mark Henry and Big Show tried to break Mark Henry's ankle with the chair, which led to Mark Henry, with his handicap, going into the cage match with Daniel Bryan on the free edition, the live edition of SmackDown last Tuesday night, which actually, that was a good main event. Daniel Bryan and Mark Henry was a good main event for the title. They had a good match. Daniel worked over Henry's bad ankle. Henry fought valiantly through it. He's obviously on his way eventually to a babyface turn. And finally, Mark Henry hit him with the world's strongest slam off the middle rope and got the win, retained the title. That leads to this match with The Big Show at the TLC pay-per-view. And also, presumably, we're going to have a Alberto Del Rio CM Punk. Or no, it's CM Punk and who is CM Punk's opponent? I don't even know where they're heading at this point. I thought it was Alberto and Punk, originally at least, in a TLC match. And I don't know. What else do we have for what are they even leading to on this show?
I have no earthly idea. Although, I guess no matter what it is, they're not going to be leading, I guess, towards... Are they leading? I guess they're not. Triple H and Kevin Nash is probably going to be held off of this thing. Yeah, I'm not sure how the... You know, you got Cody Rhodes and Booker... They'll be leading into this, too, and I'm not sure how they're going to play that. Booker came back over the weekend, wrestled a match. I believe it was in Memphis, or I'm not exactly sure where it was. I got to double-check that. But got back into the ring to work some ring rust off, because obviously they're going to have, they have the angle going on with Cody Rhodes and Booker for the Intercontinental title. So, you know, no complaints actually there. You know, it gives, you know, Cody a reason for being. I just don't think that the ladders match is going to be Jinder Mahal and Ted DiBiase, though.
All right, I'm trying to put this thing together in my head. So, obviously, we've got Henry and Kane, which is probably going to be a chairs match.
Henry and Kane?
I'm sorry, Henry... Okay, oh, gee, many Christmas. Kane's coming back. Henry and Big Show. I guess Kane could probably come back in this match, but I think he's probably coming back in January. But I believe it's going to be Punk and Del Rio, which is probably going to be the TLC match. Not positive. John Cena versus The Miz, which could be a tables match. That's possible. I don't know. Or they may do that for Randy Orton and Wade Barrett. Have that be a tables match. But I think those are the four top matches on the show. Presumably, we're going to get Dolph Ziggler and the woo-woo guy, Zack Ryder. Although I cannot guarantee that. As noted, Kevin Nash and Triple H was originally scheduled for this show, but it looks like that's being pushed to January. It's possible. They're going to be there tomorrow, but Triple H was actually supposed to be on the show several weeks ago, and he wasn't there. So they'll be in the building. Doesn't necessarily mean they'll be on TV. So I guess we just wait and see. We wait and see while they build this up. They got to have a card tomorrow because the three-hour Slammy Award show, a lot of that time is going to be spent giving away Slammys. So that's less time devoted to building up your pay-per-view. The show is not going to do well, Mike. It's not going to do well.
Not at all. It's just, you know, when they put so little effort into getting you to buy the thing, and they're more worried, and obviously they should be concerned about the Slammy thing, no matter what anybody likes or dislikes about it. You know, USA likes these three-hour shows, and they're going to give them a three-hour show, so there's nothing they can do about that. That's fine. But for heaven's sakes, at least, you know, try to lie about the matches, at least come up with some reason for people to try to, you know, get some build going into it in more than enough time.
Now, amazingly, or maybe it's not amazing because the pay-per-view is next weekend, TNA actually has a card for Final Resolution. That is the name of the pay-per-view. Taking place at the Impact Zone, obviously in Orlando. And the main event of the show is Bobby Roode defending the TNA title against AJ Styles in a 30-minute Iron Man match. So, should be a pretty good match. Their last match wasn't great, but AJ Styles was hurt. This will be better. I don't really like the idea of Iron Man matches in the sense that fans, I mean, if you look at the ratings for TV Iron Man matches, nobody cares until the end because everybody knows it doesn't matter until the end. And on top of that, you've got a guy, Bobby Roode, who they're trying to push as the champion, trying to get him over as a big deal. And in an Iron Man match, the chances are that AJ Styles is going to beat him a few times in 30 minutes. So, not a fan of it. I wish they had just done another match and had a good one. But that's the main event. They've got number one contenders match, essentially, with Jeff Hardy versus Jeff Jarrett. It's in a steel cage. The only way to win is to escape. You can't pin your opponent or make him submit. You got to run away from him.
Well, he's a champion, you see, in Mexico.
I see. On top of that, not only is it escape the cage rules, but to make sure that Karen Jarrett doesn't scale the cage and interfere, they're going to handcuff her to Sting. Stipulation.
Yeah, you know, that was a real concern that I would have had, would be her scaling the cage and jumping in Sherry Martel style.
Yeah, I mean, man, jump in there with two grown men, it's got to stop that danger from happening. Stipulations are if Jeff Jarrett wins, Jeff Hardy is done with TNA.
The handcuff thing. I mean, remember they did China and Sergeant Slaughter was one of the last times I remember them doing it, and still she threw powder and slaughter. Just, you know, Sting is, I know he's older now, he's in his early 50s and everything. Do you still really need to chain them together for him to prevent Karen Angle from doing anything?
Sure,
really?
Yeah. He is a former world champion and all within the last year, I think. But and then, she's also a giant.
But she is an Amazonian-type woman.
She is a tall, tall woman. So anyway, the Jeff Hardy-Jeff Jarrett match, if Hardy wins, he will become the number one contender for the title, which would mean it would probably be Bobby Roode versus Jeff Hardy at the Genesis pay-per-view. So there you go. I don't know if they'll put the title on Hardy. I would think that would be foolish. I would think the idea would be to hold off Bobby Roode's title loss until lockdown when he can lose it to James Storm. But it's TNA. They've done stranger things. We've got a women's title match, Gail Kim versus Mickie James for the knockout title, and also three other matches. Tag team match, Crimson and Morgan versus D-Von and D'Angelo De Niro, which God knows they've been building up that breakup forever. We'll see if it actually happens here on this show, or if it's a swerve, the boys help D-Von and D'Angelo De Niro beat up Crimson and Morgan. How about that for a swerve? And we've also got Austin Aries versus Kid Cash for the X Division title, which actually I'm kind of looking forward to because I expect them to just pound the crap out of each other in that match. And then Robbie E defends his television title against Eric Young. So there you go. Six matches already announced for the Final Resolution pay-per-view, which is it's good, but at the same time, they should have six matches announced because the pay-per-view is next weekend. Although we will find out if WWE announces six matches by the time Raw is over tomorrow. I'll bet you, Mike, $5 that we don't have six matches by the end of tomorrow's show.
I can't take that action because I think you're exactly correct. Now, I will be okay if the D-Von's boys there attack Crimson and Morgan and form a group with their father, Andy Angelo De Niro, as long as they can get the rights to Family Affair, the old song from the late 70s, and they can all come out to that music for a while. But it always amazed me with TNA, again, when they found out, and I know they had the ball rolling with the angle thing with James Storm and Bobby Roode and AJ Styles, and again, not matches that I have any issue with whatsoever, but if he was not going to be out for that long, and they already jumped to doing a moronic heel turn with Bobby Roode right off the bat, that this should really be Roode and Storm. They should have been able to figure out a way, and if they had any creativity at all, they'd be rolling along with that right now, because you already jumped the gun with it to begin with, so don't draw it out for any longer. Have them go at each other.
Oh, that's right. There's also likely going to be the Kurt Angle versus James Storm match. So that's 7 matches they have announced, and Angle and James Storm probably going to be a pretty darn good match if it's anything like the first match they had, which was a free television match, and it was awesome. Kind of actually, after all these years, I remember when America's Most Wanted was popular, and they were talking about breaking them up, and they said, man, that Chris Harris is going to go on to be a big star. And if you don't believe me, like I've said, all of these shows are available at WrestlingObserver.com. You can go back and listen. I said from day one, the man in this duo who's going to be a star is not Chris Harris. It's James Storm. He's a good worker. He's got tons of personality. He's going to be awesome. And believe it or not, it took TNA management until that match with Kurt Angle, like a month ago, to figure out, my God, James Storm has it. So anyway, we're going to be back in just a moment talking more Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and our newest over-the-air affiliate in Memphis, Tennessee, Sports 56, AM 560, WHBQ. Welcome, the home of Jerry Lawler, listening to this show every single Sunday. If you work at a radio station, or you got a radio station in the area, you think it'd be an awesome, awesome radio station to house Wrestling Observer Live every Sunday, contact me, Brian, at WrestlingObserver.com. I'll put you in touch with the right people. We'll get this show, I was going to say worldwide, I want to take this show throughout the universe. There's radio stations on the moon at some point. Anyway, WrestlingObserver.com is a place to go for more. We do radio shows every single day. If you love this show, you only get to hear it once per week. Well, you're missing out. Every day, radio shows. This past Thursday, I had 3 shows. 3 shows in one day. We got so many shows, 15 to 20 per week. It's amazing on the website. Check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. It's $10.99 per month. $10.99 a month to sign up. Of course, there's a lot of free stuff up there as well. Don't avoid the website because there's a subscription area. There's tons of great free stuff as well. But if you subscribe, you get even more. Every show that we have ever done dating back to 2005, and keep in mind, 15 to 20 radio shows per week multiplied by 6 years, we're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of shows at your disposal right now. Interview some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Ric Flair, Bret Hart, Bruno Sammartino. We have Bobby Lashley, actually, who was one half of one of the biggest main events in WrestleMania history. He's on the show this coming Tuesday. All of that available at WrestlingObserver.com. It makes a great Christmas gift for the wrestling fan in your life, including yourself, if that's you listening right now. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. You will not regret it. I've said it before, if you like this show, I guarantee you that you will love the website if you sign up. So check it out, give it a shot. If you don't like it, it's only $10.99. You never have to sign up again, but if you sign up, I think you'll like it. We were talking about the TNA show, the greatness that is James Storm. Final Resolution is coming up in a week. TLC is coming up in a couple of weeks. And the Slammy Awards, Mike. Are you looking forward to the 3-hour Slammy Award-winning Raw next week?
No, I'm not. And I'm someone that was a big fan of the original Slammy Awards, seeing them on TV, seeing the credits run, and kayfabe being the executive producer of the show, seeing Duggan and Harley Race fighting behind the scenes, and Bobby Heenan running into the manger scene, and Gorilla saying, there goes Heenan making an ass out of himself again, and Vince singing Stand Back, and If You Only Knew in quarrel capacity by the WWF universe at that time, all of that stuff. As wacky and as great as all of that is, I love great, wacky, one-off shows if everything else is going well. And really, every time they do these things now, they suck. And it's 3 hours and it's long. And we're all embittered because things aren't going well right now as it is. And now we have to watch it again for another hour. And it's probably not going to be good. And they won't announce matches. And they won't have matches like they had at least last week on TV that kind of saved the day for them. So, yeah, I'm not looking forward to this too much. I hope USA is happy with it and all that sort of stuff. But, unless they're going to have some great surprises out of nowhere, and what makes you think that they're going to do that, I'm not looking forward to it at all. I might just watch tapes of the old Slammy Awards.
I'm actually looking at WWE.com. There's no Slammy categories, awards, anything like that. So presumably that's all going to be announced tomorrow.
And now, do you remember the lyrics to If You Only Knew?
You're asking the wrong guy. Let's just say that.
Really, you should do that. We should do that at the site. We should all take apart and relive the If You Only Knew theme song.
Relive it, you say?
Yes.
I don't know if I'd
use
that term.
If you only knew what I'm going to do to you, you'll be running out of here as fast as those 2 feet can carry you.
I bet you could find those lyrics. I bet you could find those lyrics online and recite them here, and someone would make a song out of it within about 24 hours.
The spoken word version of If You Only Knew.
That's right. I am on the WWE website, by the way, and the TLC page here announces only one match. So there you go.
And again, you're going to charge $50 for it. Just after a $50 where everybody's fighting for your dollar anyway, you've had the UFC, you know, fights coming up. You know you have Royal Rumble, so people could wait to get their wrestling fix till that point. You had Cotto and Margarito last night. You've had stuff going on where, again, you're fighting for that dollar. Why are you not trying to extract that dollar?
Especially when it's 14 days, 3 hours, 34 minutes, and 12 seconds away, according to this clock on WWE.com.
Yeah, and Adam and I in the Big Audio Nightmare, which will actually be up on the site tonight, a new edition of that for the members, we talk about we're running out of time for the Tokyo Dome show on January 4th, and the only thing they have announced is it came out of a pay-per-view today, where there's some stuff that looks like it's going to happen, but the only thing for sure that we know is Minoru Suzuki will be taking on Hiroshi Tanahashi as Tanahashi tries to break Yuji Nagata's record for title defenses, and we're questioning whether that's going to be enough time to get people into that match, which doesn't look to be good, but it doesn't look to be headlining their WrestleMania level of show. So, and again, that's more than a month we've got for that one. Where it comes to this, and only 2 weeks from now, you got nothing. It boggles your mind.
Tell us about the life and times of Bison Smith.
Yeah, it's this was rough for me because I heard it right before Thanksgiving. And for those people that remember the old Teresu Power Hour radio show, a podcast that Zach Arnold, Keith Lipinski, and I used to do, Bison was a regular guest on there. And you know, anything you heard about Bison Smith since he passed away, it's not true. He was even nicer than that. At least he was to me. He was always really good to me, and we never wanted to get into the political structure or anything like that of Noah, because, you know, frankly, he didn't know all that sort of much anyway, but he was able to really give me a good kind of layout of what the scene was like there. And, you know, he was just a nice, nice guy, and he was a nice guy that, you know, he started off on the West Coast. He was going to kind of be the next Vader over there. He was kind of going to be that next generation of guy. I think Vader went to Colorado State, was a football player there. Bison went to Colorado, and, you know, a big, unique-looking guy. And just because of the way the Noah structure was at the time, and just because he wasn't, you know, at that Vader level, you know, Bison, he had a good career, but he was one of those guys. His style and his size and everything, he didn't catch on here in the States as much as he wanted to. He went back and forth between Pro Wrestling Noah, who always treated him well, and working for WWC in Puerto Rico, and bouncing back and forth. And it's just, it was really a surprise, a really nice guy, very sweet guy, and at 38 years old was just a real surprise to hear about before Thanksgiving. And really, it for me, it really sucked, because, again, he was very helpful to me and very nice to me when he didn't have to be. And we talked to so many spazzes and goofs in MMA, and, you know, Brian, you know this, trying to get guys on at certain times for shows. And, you know, he was always there, you know, when he said we were going to call, or if he said he was going to call, he was always there. You know, he was just a normal guy with so many goofballs in this business. It was just nice to talk to a guy who was just a cool guy. Talking with him, I was thinking about him last night, talking about like Tito Trinidad, and back when we were talking about Miguel Cotto's career and how popular he was down there and how he thought he was going to be a big star. And he had that huge Cotto Margarito pay-per-view last night, and it's just really disappointing. He was a big guy who carried too much weight, and it's not a surprise in the way pro wrestlers pass away early, unfortunately, but it really kind of hurt my feelings just because he was so good to me, and he was just such a nice, nice guy.
On the subject of Japan, hopefully on a little bit happier note, WWE was over there, and I presume that you saw the picture of John Cena rocking the Zubaz pants?
You know, it was always a surprise, back growing up in the 80s where everything was very kayfabe, when you started to get access, at least for me in the early 90s, to some of the Japanese tapes, and you'd see, the way they would conduct things. You'd hear Bruiser Brody not being crazy. He was talking in a normal tone, and you hear Abdullah the Butcher speak and you never heard him speak in America. It was always bizarre to hear that, and then you'd see the Road Warriors showing up at the airport, and they didn't have their makeup on, but they had muscle shirts on as they're going down, and they had these big old Zubaz pants. And they're nothing screams the NFL and pro wrestling in the late 80s, I believe it was, in the early 90s, than Zubaz pants and a fanny pack. And John Cena found himself some Zubaz pants. And, yeah, I don't know if we blame the weightlifting industry for that. I don't know who we blame. I think we technically actually helped to blame Road Warrior Animal. I think he had some interest into that. Yes, Zubaz pants, much like the Jams shorts, probably should be gone forever, unless you're a chef, because they always wear wacky pants.
And a Ribera Steakhouse jacket.
And you know what? One day, and I want to earn it, though. I don't want to just get one. I want to actually go over there, go to the Ribera Steakhouse, and actually rock the Ribera Steakhouse jacket. I was able to go to Sabatino's in Baltimore, a legendary hangout. I'd like to go to DiPaolo Steakhouse up there in Buffalo and go to Ribera Steakhouse in Tokyo.
I hear they make a mean steak.
You know, I'll take, if it's an actual Kobe steak that was like, the beer bathed and massaged and all that sort of stuff, I would love to have a Kobe steak. In Kobe, or at least outside of Kobe.
Matt Hardy is
Kobe, go to Kobe.
Matt Hardy's back in rehab. I don't know if it's been 2 weeks. I don't know if we've even covered this whole story. It was a whirlwind.
We have to. They lowered his bail. He's out. He's back in rehab. Matt Hardy, everybody.
An amazing. I can't even. Oh my God. They lowered his bail from $1 million to $100,000 after. While in rehab, he got kicked out because they thought he'd been drinking excessively. How do you lower the bail after that situation occurs?
Because, look, I think you can argue that who is he? Obviously, he's a threat on the road, but you'd figure they've taken his license and all that stuff, and it's just like he's mostly a danger to himself, and if he's just sitting there not getting the proper treatment that he probably needs because of that $1 million bail, you lower to $100,000, somebody pays the $10,000, or if he paid it or whoever paid it, at least it gives him the ability to go back into a more proper, more intensive, type of therapy, because obviously this man needs more intensive, more proper therapy than just sitting in jail rotting. It helps him to dry out. It's another shock to the system and all of that stuff. But this man needs, legit serious help, and I don't know if sitting there in jail, I'm not saying it's right, the way these things go. I mean, everything's up for debate, I guess, on this a little bit, but, this dude needs more help than he could get just sitting there in lockup.
Well, yeah, but the whole deal was he was in lockup, and they were like, okay, we'll let you out to go to rehab. That's why they let him out, to go get help.
Oh,
and he screwed it up. So
it's a wicked double standard. Look at Lindsay Lohan. Would be in any other place. She was any other person. She would have been in jail for a long, long time, a long time ago. I'm not saying there's not a double standard here either, because you know what? If he couldn't come up with that 10, I guarantee he'd still be rotten in there too. And, again, if this is just some guy on the street, they don't do that with his bail anyway, I wouldn't think. But then again, nobody would have gotten away with anything this much.
So that's the story on Matt Hardy, everybody. And meanwhile, on TNA, Jeff Hardy is he's about to get a shot at the title, it's looking like. So that's how things work here. So we'll see if Matt gets the help he needs. And if not, I don't know. I don't know. I did love the explanation of, no, I realize that my my levels are very, very high, but I just gargled mouthwash. Really?
Hey, it's like these guys using the 0.0 blood alcohol use when they get pulled over. It's mind-numbing that they can actually spit that nonsense and think people believe it.
We're going to head to a break. When we come back, we'll be talking more Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here as we are every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet. The best website for your pro wrestling and mixed martial arts needs in the world! WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. And Mike, on the house shows this weekend, one of WWE's big stars, literally big, returned to the ring after over a year off for a broken ankle, and a bad angle, I'm sure, and multiple surgeries. Skip Sheffield is back.
You know, I remember when all that stuff was going on with Nexus, and it was like to thin the herd down and get it to where it was like an effective one with like McGillicuddy and, you know, and all that stuff, and you knew Otunga was going to be there. It was like they had these injuries that happened in kind of a way at the best time, Tarver going, Sheffield going, but you figured he would have been back by now, but, you know, he is back. I can't remember who he beat. I think it was Alex, or I think it may have been actually been Alex Riley, who's been on a poor streak here recently. In his first match back, and Skip Sheffield is huge. He certainly looks huge from the picture, so maybe they should stick up him and Mason Ryan together, and they should just be Team Spice.
Spice?
I don't know. Who am I to say anything? I just, you know, I tell you, it's like Cody coming back. I just, you know, some guys have the ability to come back from these types of things and look really, I don't know if great's the word good. How about well? Would well be a good word to use?
Sure, I guess. All I know is they had big plans for Skip Sheffield. Like, he was going to be a main event guy, and then he got hurt. And now he's back.
Brodus! They haven't reintroduced Brodus to be this big, beastly, nasty character that's what Skip Sheffield was going to be.
Hopefully Brodus returns on television this week. I think he was supposed to return last week, but he let the cat out of the bag with a tweet. Stay off Twitter, everybody! Let the cat out of the bag with a tweet. My cat actually gets in a bag, but that's a story for a different day. We gotta go, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live. We'll be back next week with a brand new show. Talking the TNA show, TLC, Slammy, so much more. Thanks for listening. Talk to you after a while. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.